Well, your name, please, and your occupation, and your specialist subject. The original producer for Mastermind was interrogated by the Gestapo during the war, and some say that he designed the quiz with his wartime experiences in mind. Over the years, you may remember, BBC turned down a number of specialist topics. Orthopedic bone cement in total hip replacement. Or the managerial career of Brian Clough. It's hard to imagine why they turned that one down. After 2 minutes, there was a buzzer. And then do you remember if Magnus Magnusson was in the middle of a question, he'd always say, "I've started, so I'll finish." And then he'd ask the next contender, "What is your name, please?" And today's Bible story, God's messenger asks the central character, "What is your name, please?" We've been tracking these stories, the stories of God's promises set from 3,500 years ago, taking shape in the life of Abraham's grandson. We've been at it for a few Sundays now. We're getting to know him. We followed him through several decades. And today's passage records an extraordinary encounter between Jacob and someone who turns out to be an angel. Turns out it seems to be God himself in a way, as Jacob leaves the land where he's been for those 20 years in response to God's instructions. He was leading you seriously astray at the start of the chapter. Start of the service, Jacob is not me. Jacob and his family is the acorn that becomes the church. Jacob, if you like, is us, the people of God in the world, as we'll see. And instead of moving through the story scene by scene, as we often do, I want to concentrate on the heart of this particular scene, where Jacob is left alone, and then where Jacob clings on, and then where Jacob receives a new name. So Jacob was left alone. If you look in verse 22 of Genesis chapter 32, our storyteller wants us to know that Jacob was left alone. So as you see, he got up, he took his two wives, his servants, his 11 sons, crossed the ford. After he'd sent them across, he sent over all his possessions. Start of verse 24, Jacob was left alone. There was a night 20 years earlier when he was alone, when he left home in a hurry. He'd conned his father into giving him a blessing that should have gone to his brother. His brother was angry enough to kill him. And then as Jacob left home, God appeared to him, promised to go with him, protect him and bless him. And since that night, 20 years before, he's hardly ever been alone. For 20 years, he's been farming, breeding sheep and goats successfully, in spite of all kinds of difficulty of the climate, the opposition from those around him, hard work and injustice. He's an activist. He knows how to wrestle with people and get things done. He's done better at work than he did at home. He's raised a seriously unhappy family. We saw how he was conned into marrying the wrong girl. And then he also married the girl of his dreams, had children by a couple of servant girls along the way, and he's been fighting with his father-in-law for all those 20 years. What's not yet clear is what 20 years of struggling and wrestling have done to his character. He was a deceitful person when he left home. That's the kind of person he was at that stage in the story. But even in last week's episode, the storyteller told us that he deceived his father-in-law and recorded for us his wife, Rachel, the woman he's loved all those years, deceiving her own father. And we're left wondering, is he still the man he was at the start of the story? And now he's going home, and this is the second big moment, 20 years after the first moment, when he's alone, and he's terrified. He's afraid of his brother. Last time he saw his brother, 20 years before, his brother wanted to kill him, and now just over the horizon, he's heard his brother is coming towards him with an army, and he is utterly alone. Right from the beginning, it's been clear that God loves him in ways that are sometimes mysterious to us. God loves him in spite of the sort of person he was. God loved him before he was born. God loved him when he was inside his mother's womb. We're told of that, and today's story records the God who's loved this man, forcing him to be alone with God. Well, why would God do that to Jacob? Why does God do that to Jacob? What are we to make of the fact that God arranges for Jacob and God to be alone with each other. Many of us don't like the idea of alone being alone with God. All of us have our share of sharp questions, and some of them deeply painful, and questions that have been with us for decades that we'd very much like to ask God. And all of us can think of questions that we might think God would want to ask us. It's not just MPs, if you like, who have past or present that make them blush. But as Jacob's experience with God is set here for all God's people to see and recorded and read by them for generations after this episode took place, it may just be that there's something here for all of us, that there is a sense in which God will make it plain to us that he will, in the end, achieve us being alone with him. You notice how our culture is increasingly full of noise. There are voices and music and screens, distractions. For some people, that's how they avoid being alone with themselves, let alone avoiding God. As the story of the Bible develops, it's very clear that to meet with God personally is a delight and a joy for everyone who'll come to him gladly. Jesus issues that famous invitation. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest." And we've shaped our life together for two decades around that invitation. I want to encourage you, as you see Jacob on his own with God, to choose to be alone before God, rather than wait until circumstances make that something that's unavoidable, either through sickness or through a strained relationship or frustration or being set aside through ill health, disappointment or work at work or some other crisis. Make time to be alone with God. Do that regularly, consistently. Whether you walk the dog or get up early, choose what God chose here for Jacob and what Jacob in the end needed to know. So Jacob was alone before God. What did Jacob do when he's alone before God? Well, he clings on. Do you see how that develops as the story is told? Look in verse 25 of the story. The man saw that he could not overpower him, even though he dislocated his hip. The man says in verse 26, "Let me go, for it's daybreak." But Jacob replies, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." This is not the kind of wrestling you see on the telly, where they throw each other out of the ring. He hasn't got the angel in a half Nelson. This is much more like the first day at preschool, when there's always one child, isn't there, who can't let go. He hangs on to mommy's leg, and there's just no way he's going to let go, and it takes three members of staff to prise him off, bribery and a stiff drink for mommy afterwards to recover. And that's how Jacob hangs on to heaven's representative. Even though a dislocated hip is a serious injury, he falls to the ground, he's holding on tight. The man appears to want him to go because the sun is coming up. It's going to be daylight. Sounds like something out of a vampire film, doesn't it? That there's a problem with the sunlight, but it's more likely that it's not safe for Jacob to see him face to face, which he would do in daylight. The man says, "Let me go," and Jacob says, "No, I won't, I can't." He's desperate for whatever this man has got available to him that will bless him from heaven. He's terrified of his brother's anger. Spent the whole day preparing a massive sweetener for his brother. We didn't read that bit, but he's put 570 animals into different groups, if you do the maths, to give to his brother. That's how he measures the size of the offense against his brother. I don't know how it is in your family. If you fall out with somebody near to you, you might send chocolates. You might send flowers. You might offer a bottle of wine, if that's a kind of suitable currency, a peace offering that they would be glad to receive and understand. You might send all three if you're conscious of a kind of really behaving dreadfully. But it's hard to imagine behaving so badly that you need to send 220 goats, 220 sheep, 30 camels, 40 cows, 10 bulls, and 30 donkeys. By the way, if you see them turning up tomorrow, you'll know that I've offended you in some way or other. But that's what Jacob does. And he is still terrified that that's not going to be enough. He knows he's such, if you like, a moral disaster, that he's afraid that even a gift of that size, given in stages, is not going to be enough to save him from his brother's murderous hostility, even 20 years later. Have we been in Jacob's position, wrestling with somebody who seemed to have supernatural strength and who said, "Let go"? I think we'd say, "Okay, sorry, I'll do that." But there are times, as it appears in the spiritual realm, when it's as if God says, go away and don't pray. So that we don't go away and do pray. And Jacob knows that. And so when this angel, as he turns out to be, says, let go, Jacob says, no way, because he knows that after 20 years of God's help in all kinds of ways, he now needs God's help really badly for what lay ahead of him. And it was not safe for him to let go unless God's blessing went with him. And for more than 1,000 years, God's ancient people read this story. They look back to this story. This is the beginning of something massive as they spread out into the land that God chose for them. And they look back at the one they identified as the father of their nation, desperately holding on to the man from heaven, painfully aware of his need for God's blessing. What do you think they learned as they read that story together for 1,000 years? They must have seen that God chose this man to be their spiritual father, in spite of his obvious weaknesses. God blessed this one, in spite of the obvious flaws in his character, even 20 years later. God used this one and blessed others through this one, in spite of his waywardness and repeated weakness and deliberate disobedience. They must have learned at least that. If you fast forward past the first ever Christmas, past the first ever Easter, think of those freshly forming Christian communities spreading out around the Mediterranean world and then fanning out all over the known world and to every place where a plane can land in today's world. For 20 centuries, Christian communities have read this story, knowing that God's blessing for us is found in Jesus Christ and clinging on to the one who came from heaven for us. What do you think Christian people all around the world and through 20 centuries have learned from this story? Surely the story reminds us that we easily lose sight of who we are. We lose sight of the lifelong flaws in our character, the issues with which we have struggled over the years. We underestimate our need for God's blessing if we think we don't need to make such a fuss as Jacob did. At the same time, we easily underestimate God's kindness. If he was willing to help someone as deeply unattractive as Jacob, then there's kindness in him that we can discover for ourselves. When we think about the issues in our own families, then many of us do come nearer to acknowledging that we need help from somewhere. And if there's a man from heaven who can give it to us, then we'll be glad to cling on to him until he does, because the issues in our families are often bigger than us. The pain is beyond us. The situations are intractable. They're insoluble by us. And we need someone from somewhere to help us. Well, Jacob pictures that. So he encourages us to come to the risen Christ in prayer and cling on until we find help from him. So first, Jacob was left alone. Then Jacob clings on. And third, Jacob receives a new name. We look again at verse 27 in the story with me. The man from heaven asked him, what is your name? And Jacob means something like, if we're going to be kind of not very kind to him, his name means something like Jack the Ripoff. He was given this name when he tried to race his twin brother out of the womb. It's as if he said to his brother, you get back in here, I'm going first. And he grows up, he grabs his brother's blessings. And when he says his name in this situation, when he's being asked by this individual, it's very unlikely that he can say his name with anything even remotely close to pride. He's acknowledging that as his name, so has his character been. He knows what he's done. He knows how much he needs God to rescue him from himself and his past. He knows how much he needs God's help for the future. And the name that he's given is a very wonderful new name. Do you see in verse 28? We're told in verse 28, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel. And the name means God wrestles. The new name given to him in this setting means something like he's a God wrestler. It's not particularly remarkable that Jacob wrestles with men. We've watched him doing that. We've watched him getting his own way, getting things done with God's help. For 20 years, the shock is that here he wrestles with God himself and is allowed in some sense to survive, and more than to survive, to overcome. So here's a new start for Jacob. He admits, if you like, who he's been. He receives a fresh beginning from God, looking forwards, and they'll go on to sing songs about this name. It's an honorable name. It's a fresh start for him and his family going forwards, but also for God's people as a whole, as he represents them and us. When people come among us on a Sunday with the church family here, and somebody at work says on a Monday, "Oh, where were you yesterday?" And they say, "And so what was it like?" They could say it was friendly. And by God's grace, that's been true over the years. They could say, I've been surprised to see so many there. And again, we've seen God's generosity over the years. What do we want them to say? Surely, after a few Sundays with us, we want them to see that we know how weak we are. We want them to be able to say they listen to God. They love God. They're actually quite kind to those around them. And they're people who wrestle with God as they look for help from God. And I want to say you are people like that. You do wrestle with God. I've seen the privilege of, had the privilege of seeing you wrestle in all kinds of situations for help from God. And here's Jacob saying it's okay to be desperate before God. It's okay to be people who are determined to hang on to the man from heaven, and if you like, refuse to leave until he helps us. Sunday by Sunday, day by day, it's okay to be people who come wrestling to receive help at home, help in our marriages, help with our children, help with our grandchildren, help with parents and brothers and sisters, and hardship and injustice and weakness and loneliness and frailty and doubts and desires. And it's okay to wrestle for forgiveness and God's power to remake us through faith in Jesus Christ, and God's kindness to help us. And Jacob pictures, if you like, refusing to let go until we receive the kind of help that we know that we need. And for him, as for us, in every ending, there is also a new beginning, because God is involved and is bigger than any individual, bigger than any episode. We're privileged to be part of a bigger story that God is always at work to move forwards and ultimately bring to a conclusion. And we can see that in Jesus himself, as his story on earth drew towards a close. We remember Good Friday and Easter Sunday, but the Thursday night, there was a moment on that evening when Jesus was seen praying. And he prayed like a wrestler. He prayed with great drops of sweat pouring off him as he submitted himself to God's good purpose for him and for us, as he prepared to go to the cross to secure God's blessing for us. So as we look forward together, let me ask you this question. What do you want your son or your daughter to remember about you? It's quite a thought, isn't it? Do you want them to remember your superb dahlias? Or your reputation at the golf club? Nothing wrong with dahlias or the golf club. What if they knew that you were a man or a woman who wrestles with God? What if they knew that you were someone who clings on to God day after day and year after year? What if your neighbors remembered you as someone who was determined to be blessed by God through the man who came from heaven to make that possible? You'd settle for that. And as a church family, what do we want the wider community to know about us here going forwards? And we'd settle, wouldn't we, to be known as a community in which we're weak. And we know that. We're wayward. And we know that. We're often deliberately disobedient to what we know to be right. And we know that too. And God knows that as well. But we are people who are real about our need for receiving blessing from God in all the ways that we're aware, but supremely in the ways that he's aware that we need that. And we show up Sunday by Sunday, and we meet up day in, day out, and we meet privately with God because we are, in the end, desperate to be blessed by him. We'd settle for that. And if that's foreign territory to you, certainly not anything that you've experienced personally, may I encourage you to get started while you can, while you have opportunity. Respond to that invitation from Jesus Christ, who came from heaven and offers us the blessing of God, the presence of God in our lives, and invites us to cling to him, admit who we are, seek a fresh start with him. Doesn't matter how old we are, it'll never be easier than it is today.